accession number 27814, Mr. David Butt, Reel 7. We were talking about your time on HMS Aine with the Home Fleet from July 53 to August 54. And you're talking about what the leading signaller did, what his role was in the mess routine.
Yeah, I mean, the leading hand of the mess, or killick of the mess as we call them, I mean, he was just responsible for maintaining discipline in the mess, of course, tidiness, and that you went where you're supposed to go. Obviously you had pipes, as we call it, which was the instructions coming over the tannoy, so you basically knew where to go. But if, for instance, he came down the mess at any one time and saw somebody in the mess during the day that wasn't maybe a night watchman and entitled to be in the mess, then it would be his responsibility to find out where you're supposed to have been and why you're not there, etc., etc. But realistically, he was just to control the mess and make sure everybody did what they're supposed to do. I organise who was collecting the food that day, who was the rumbos, and etc., etc. That was his function. Most cases it worked fine. You did get the odd one who wasn't very good at it. but because he was a senior hand, that was his function, i.e. in the length of time he'd been a leading hand, that was what dictated who was the leading hand of the mess.
Now, what was the sort of food arrangements? Was it canteen messing? No.
Canteen messing was only on very small ships. That was when you actually bought your own food. In a lot of cases, went ashore and bought it, and you gave it to a chef to actually cook. But general, no, it's cafeteria. Not cafeteria messing either. Cafeteria messing is where you have an actual cafeteria to go and eat. In general, on smaller ships in those days, frigates and destroyers at least, you ate in the mess. So the cooks of the mess would go along before breakfast, before lunch, etc.
They were appointed each day, were they?
They were appointed, yeah, for each day or for a certain period of time. And again, it depended on the watches, etc. So obviously a cook of the mess couldn't go and get the meals if he was on watch at that time, so somebody else was detailed. They would go along the galley, they would collect the foods, normally in trays, and take it back to the mess, and they would be dished out by the cook of the mess then, or by basically the fellow who collected it, through each individual. Somebody would go along, probably another one would go along and make what they call a fanny of tea. A fanny was a big sort of urn type thing. They'd make the tea, bring that back, and whoever was in the mess would sort of get out the cutlery and just dish it around for the number of people that were there. So that worked very well. It was routine. Obviously when it was very rough, it was difficult at times. It wasn't uncommon for somebody to fall down the hatchway with a tray in his hands. It's a great laughter from everybody else, of course. But that's wasn't really pleasant if it was hot.
And what was the food like? How good was the food?
It wasn't brilliant. It was edible. It depended. I mean, basically you relied on the chef on board. They were trained chefs, and in fact their training was absolutely first class, and they were capable of turning out magnificent meals if they wanted to, but of course they didn't particularly want to. A, there might not have been enough chefs to cope with the amount of meals they were doing, and B, they weren't particularly interested anyway. It was just a job, cook it, chuck it out and get rid of it, basically.
So what type of meals would you get? Breakfast, for instance?
Yeah, breakfast, I mean, it really didn't differ much from Ganges. It was very similar type meals right the way through the Navy. It was only if you got into barracks or into large ships, which I didn't, except for one, for a few weeks, that it might be might be a bit more varied, but basically it was fairly basic food, blandly cooked.
Enough of it?
I think generally there was enough of it, yeah. Sometimes there were some over, some didn't all necessarily want what they had or didn't like certain things. So, yeah, I mean, generally it was enough. Yeah, I don't think there was a real problem with quantity. You did have tea as well, which I think was just basically bread and butter. Well, bread and margarine, should I say, except Sundays, and bread and butter. And a cup of tea, and then you had supper. So that was a sort of a...
Well, they're still giving you that cocoa stuff. I've just, the name's gone out of my head.
Kai. Well, that was not so much they gave you that. That was something you made for watchkeepers when you were on watch. That was a lifesaver in the middle of the night. Somebody on watch would actually say, well, yeah, anybody want a cup of Kai? And he'd disappear down the...
Now, what was Kai? Because it's quite the same as cocoa, is it?
It's like a block of chocolate. Very hard chocolate, plain chocolate. And you shaved it off with a knife. Shaved it off into a little heap and then put whatever amount into a mug. Tin mugs, of course. And you'd get your instructions if, you know, whoever was making it, oh, I want a strong one, or I want a weak one, I don't want a lot of sugar, or all this sort of stuff. And it was all tin milk, of course, if you were at sea. You wouldn't have Kai normally in harbour, I don't think, although occasionally somebody'd sit there in the evening and say, oh, let's go make a cup of Kai, but probably not. It was mainly a watchkeeper's drink. You wouldn't normally get it from the galley as such. It was tea. I don't think we ever had coffee.
What about the rum ration? I mean, were you entitled to it at that stage?
You're not entitled to rum till you're 20.
Right, so yeah. we'll leave that till later. Yeah. Now, what about the watch system generally? Could you explain how it worked and where things like cleaning ship and your actual duties as a signaller fit in with it all?
Yeah. Well, the watches normally on routine exercises, well, not exercises, but routine daily operations, there'd be four watches. And that would be blue and red watches and first, second, etc. The routine, on average, if there's four watches, you would go on watch, say, at 8 o'clock in the morning until midday, 12 o'clock. Somebody else would come on from 12 until 4. Then somebody else from 4 until 6, which is the dog watch, the first dog. And then somebody else would come on for the second watch, that's right, for the second dog watch. And you'd come back on at 8 o'clock in the evening for the first watch, 8 till midnight. And that would gradually move on. The next day you would do the afternoon watch, and you go on from there.
Now, what would you do when you were on watch? What was your watch-keeping station?
Well, that would normally it would be on the flag deck, sometimes on the bridge. Again, depending. At night time, it would always be on the bridge.
Now, what were your duties on? We'll do the bridge first and flag deck second. What were your duties on the bridge when you were on watch?
Basically, your duties were... If you were in company, of course, you would be, again, sending or receiving signals or waiting to send or receive signals. You might have to go down to the signal office to type out signals. You might have to do some cryptography. You might have to do fleet work. Again, depending on whether you're in company, convoys, or whatever.
Whereabouts were you on the bridge? I mean...
Or you could float about. You would have, on the bridge itself, you would have a little table, a signalman's table, and that was just to put your pads and stuff and your books, signal books if you needed them, this type of thing. If you're on the flag deck, then you would go from side to side to keep a thorough lookout for signals from other ships.
Now, on the bridge first, when you're on the bridge, I mean, who did you, if you got the signal, who did you give it to? The signal officer, the captain, or what?
Quite often, if you were just on normal routine, saying go from A to B, you would only have an officer watch on the bridge necessarily, so you would tell the officer watch what the signal was, who it was from, etc. If it was a small, a very short signal, you could verbally tell him. You would still write it down because it had to go on the log, but you could verbally tell him that, you know, ship so-and-so is doing whatever.
Could they read them themselves?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd write it down so you could give it to him and he could read it if he wanted to.
No, I mean, could they read the signals? I mean, some of them must have...
Yeah, some officers could read basic Morse, yeah. And some did understand a few set flags. Very few, if any, could read semaphore.
So you'd tell them anyway, whatever?
You would tell them anyway, and you know, obviously, some of them being... the type they were try and catch you out. You know, if they could read it themselves, they'd wait for you to tell them. You know, and if you got it wrong, they would certainly let you know. I mean, you could abbreviate signal, for instance. You know, it's a load of waffle sometimes. You just give them the basics, and they just say, "Well, I didn't say that, did it?" You know? So you'd have to tell them the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, there were some who would take the trouble to learn it, and certainly the older ones probably that have been to sea for years, you know, pick it up bit by bit.
And what were most of the signals coming in? Or when you're on the bridge, they'd be...
On the bridge, well, it would be generally manoeuvring signals, or instructions for the following day, or, you know, this type of thing. You had a lot of this... MRPs, Max requests the pleasure of your company for drinks in harbour or whatever, this sort of thing. You'd have to send an RSVP, you know, reply, many thanks for your invitation, this type of thing. Quite a lot of that goes on if it's quiet. Don't get it in exercises, of course, and stuff. But if they're just on passage somewhere, maybe to join an exercise or whatever, then you'd get a lot of this, you know, casual banter going across and signals.
And most commonly, would there be, I mean, Morse flashing, or what was the most common?
Yeah,
method?
I think most common would be Morse, yeah.
By light,
by
signal.
Light, yeah. Yeah, there were some, there were always some, you'd get some skippers would say, send by semaphore, for instance. And this would just be something he decided he wanted to do for some reason. Or you'd get senior hand or yeoman, chief yeoman, who much preferred sending 7-4 than light, and would automatically do it. So if you knew you were going in company with a certain ship, you knew that you were going to get 7-4 and not light most of the time during the daylight hours, you know. So yeah, I mean, it was varied, but light was certainly the main because of distance.
Would they send a wireless signal as well, or was it...
No,
it wasn't belt and braces, and it was just...
No, very rarely. If you were using voice, I mean, you'd had exercises where you were told voice only, for instance. And if you had bad reception, then they might say you'd have to, you know, superimpose that with a Morse or semaphore signal or something. In general, you didn't duplicate, completely unnecessary and just wasting time, really. But, yeah, I mean, with a 20-inch carbon lamp, for instance, you could send to the horizon. You know, 21 miles, you could read a lamp, no problem.
Now, when you were on the bridge, would people talk to you, or were you left pretty much to your own?
Oh, yeah, it did vary. I mean, you may... Again, depending on what you were doing, if it was an exercise, there'd be more than one of you on the bridge anyway, on the signal side. You had some officers of the watches, some navigating officers, very chatty, like to talk all the time. Very interesting, some of them, you know, point out various things, you know. And, you know, others just wouldn't say a word. Dead silence right through the whole watch, unless it was, you know, instructions or whatever. Skippers, again, they varied. They may be chatting amongst themselves. with the officer of the watch or the navigating officer, etc. They might chat to you, or they might ask you various questions. Occasionally they'll even ask you how you're getting on and this sort of thing. Be interested in you as an individual. Did happen. They did vary a lot. Most of them were pretty good. You had some pretty bad ones. You had the snotties, i.e. the midshipmen.
You didn't like them?
Well, it's not so much you didn't like them. They were the lowest of the low. I mean, as far as officers were concerned, the midshipman was lower than the lower deck. In other words, he was just rubbish. But it was deliberate. It was to make them learn their place, basically. They weren't an officer. They had an officer's uniform with a white flasher on their collar. And they would say they were called snotties because a lot of them were snotty. They were like that. They came out of Dartmouth or whatever, and they started trying to throw their weight about. You know, officially, yes, they were in charge of you, and they were senior to you. But any midshipman worth his salt, if he started trying giving orders to a senior hand, two or three badgemen, or a yeoman, or a chief yeoman, or something like that, he would soon learn, don't do it, sonny. You don't know what you're talking about, you know. So they don't quit, but they were treated like quite frequently by officers as well. But yeah, I mean, some of them again weren't bad, and they got more and more chatty as the longer they were on there. And eventually picked up their single stripe, you know. But yeah, it varied a lot, and sometimes there were very boring watches. Absolutely nothing happened whatsoever.
Now what about on the flag deck? How was that different?
It wasn't really. It was virtually the same. It's just,
what is it? Can you explain what the flag deck is?
Well, the flag deck, I mean, it's only called the flag deck because the flag locker was on there. But you had signal lamps and radio on the flag deck, exactly the same as you would have on the bridge, although you'd have more lamps. You'd have either larger, the 10-inch and the 20-inch lamps would be on the flag deck, whereas you could have an Aldis lamp on the bridge in the little box. So basically, it was just the signal deck, if you like. But
would they also take note of everything that was going on? Was that a duplication of what was going on the bridge?
Not really, no. I mean, it would be on the flag deck or the bridge. And
how would you know which to send? And, well, you know.
No, I mean, the instructions would come down the voice pipe. If you're on the flag deck, the instructions from the skipper or the officer of the watch would come down the voice pipe, and vice versa. So you would go up to the bridge if you needed to. If you wanted to take a signal, for instance, you read a signal from the flag deck, then you would just go up to the bridge to give it to the skipper or whoever. You might just go up the bridge for a change of scenery if all you were doing was looking, you know, keeping watch for other signals, etc. Depending on what was happening, you might have to run back down the flag deck again to actually receive a signal. But yeah, I mean, that was your choice. You did get the odd skipper in particular, not necessarily officer of the watches, sometimes a navigating officer would say, I want a signalman on the bridge, and that's where he would expect you to be, so he could just tell you straight away without using the voice pipe. Others weren't bothered where you were as long as they knew you were around and doing your job.
If you were on watch, would you always be on the bridge or the flag deck? Was that your station, or did you have any other watchkeeping stations?
Only during exercises where you might be sent down aft to the after control station, where they had after steering, this sort of thing.
An emergency?
Yeah, they had exercises for emergency situations, so they'd say the steering has gone from the wheelhouse coxswain to go down to the after steer position, which was just a wheel and a compass, and signalman might have to go down as well, you know, this type of thing. Generally, it would be flag deck and bridge if you're actually on watch. If you were not on watch during the day, you might still be on the flag deck or the bridge doing other duties, maybe cleaning.
Now tell me about cleaning ship. Would you do cleaning ship, or was that left to the seamen?
Well, every department was responsible for the cleanliness of his own part of the ship where they worked. So if you worked on the bridge and the flag deck, the bridge would possibly be shared. I mean, you'd have a navigator's yeoman, for instance, and he was an assistant to the navigator, and he would maybe be partly responsible for cleanliness on the bridge. But the flag deck was the responsibility of the signal staff alone.
And how would you clean it? I mean, you have to clean your own mess as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, basically, you clean everything in sight. You know, you clean the paintwork, you clean the brass, you clean the deck, you clean the signal lamps, etc., etc. You clean the glass on the signal lamps. You might have to take them apart, check the lamps, all this type of thing. So it was just a regular exercise to keep it clean all the time up on the upper deck. In the mess deck, you kept it clean all the time, but you had specific Saturday morning rounds which you may be cleaning thoroughly for 2 hours, and then the skipper would come round and inspect, you know, every mess deck on the ship. And again, it was competition, you know, and you get your mess cake for the best mess on the ship, this type of thing. So, you know, it was all part and parcel of the routine on the ship. And it depended a lot on what the ship was doing.
Now, what was the ship doing? You were part of the home fleet, part of the 12th destroyers.
That's right. I mean, basically, the home fleet's duties was obviously the defence of the country more than anything else. But you spent more time at sea actually on exercises than anything else. I mean, the exercise could be just you and a submarine. The submarine would be diving and you would have to track it. They used to throw hand grenades over the side. If they found a submarine, they threw a hand grenade over the side to let it know it'd been caught, and this type of thing. You might be doing torpedo exercises where you actually go and fire torpedoes at something or other. It could be a rock on the coast. There's special areas around the coast for torpedo firing practice, this type of thing. A lot of gunnery practice, which it could be at aircraft towing. We call pilots, you know, target aircraft to tow target. It could be firing at a seaborne target, which I'll come to later because I was on a tug that did that. A lot of the time was gunnery practice. So it really was weapons training. If you were a lone ship or just the squadron itself, which would have been four ships. And then you had the major exercises.
And where would you do the small exercise? Would that be round the coast of Britain?
They would all be round the coast. It would always be the Irish Sea, the North Sea, and the Channel. Not so much the Channel because it's so busy. It's such a busy shipping lane anyway. But it'd be the Irish Sea, the North Sea, and up Scapa Flow area, up above north of Scotland, etc. That would be the home fleet's operating area. You go out into the North Atlantic on the west on occasions, but because of the time factor of going around from Chatham, for instance, they would concentrate most exercises in the North Sea. They wouldn't go all the way around the top. If you're based in Scotland, then you possibly go around to the North Atlantic as well. Depends on the size of the exercise, really, and who was involved. Convoy exercises, of course, and you would need certainly the North Sea and the Atlantic if you're convoy of any size.
And what about the bigger exercises, the fleet exercises? Tell me about them.
Exercises, well, that they really were designed for, I suppose, for the benefit of the Navy in learning the whys and wherefores of escort duty and how it should be best, you know, working out how it should be best carried out with different sizes of convoys. From the convoy point of view themselves, the merchant ships, of course, they had to learn a certain amount of discipline in formation, cruising, if you like, and accepting orders from the commodore of the fleet, or the convoy commodore, whichever. And you would get the whole thing. You would get submarines attempting to attack the convoy from all directions. You would get aircraft attacking the convoy. And depending on what type of ship you were on, you would be either anti-submarine warfare or anti-aircraft warfare, or both, depending on your position in the screen. So, basically all the time of the home fleet was exercise, and learning the ins and outs of warfare of various types. And the only alternative to that was when you had the summer courtesy visits, which I believe the Navy still do, your so-and-so ship being in Newcastle or whatever. You went to show the flag, realistically, around the coast during the summer.
Okay, what was that like? That's around the coast?
That was good, because it was more relaxing. You'd probably be on your own. You maybe only get one ship go to one port or one seaside resort. If you were lucky, you would go somewhere where you could berth alongside. And you would be allowed shore leave every evening if you weren't on watch, basically, and weekends. You might have to anchor off, in which case you'd have to get liberty boats in at certain times. All restricted leave, of course, and the hours you could spend ashore. In the early days, when I was on the Aisne, I think you had to be back on board by 11 o'clock in the evening.
I'll come to going ashore. What about these courtesy visits to coastal ports? What would happen? I mean, would people be allowed aboard the ship, or would you just
Yes, you would normally have some open days, again, where the whole ship had been spruced up. You would do a lot of the sprucing up on the way there, depending on the weather. On occasions, you couldn't do any until you got there. So you then spend a day or so actually thoroughly cleaning the ship and getting all the salt off, salt spray, etc., of everything. And then, if possible, the ship would be open. If you were there long enough, the ship would be open to visitors. And you would get all and sundry coming on board. Some very interested in ships themselves, some very interested in the sailors. They were enjoyable visits, most of them. You did go to the odd place, which wasn't particularly, we spent time in Blythe, not on the Aisne, but on another ship. That's not particularly the best of places to go for a courtesy visit. So.
Now, what about visit to Broad?
Not in the home fleet, except Gibraltar, really. We went continent. We went over to, where did we go? Not many places. We went to Brest, I think. Went to Amsterdam.
What do you remember of Brest or Amsterdam?
Brest was a naval port anyway, so basically there was nothing to that. It was a dead and alive place, as far as I can remember. So that wasn't any great pleasure as a visit. It was part of the end of an exercise, or before the beginning of an exercise, I think that was. We went to Ireland as well. We went to Northern Ireland, not Southern Ireland at that stage. Amsterdam, I think, and Gibraltar was as far as you went in the home fleet, generally. And that, again, was only as a precursor or as an aftermath of an exercise, really, just for the ships, for the fleet to form up somewhere. So, generally, it was home visits.